All right, I'd like to call the June 13th meeting of Ways and Means to order. I'm going to skip over Resolution 123. Resolution 332. Can I have a motion?
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Discussion? We do have some college here. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried. Resolution 333 is
followed. I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I move we block 334 and 35.
Second?
I got a question on those. I'll second the block.
Okay. All in favor of blocking?
Aye.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to block. Motion?
Motion? I'll move
second.
It.
Second. Okay. Discussion?
Yeah. So on 334 during our caucus, I don't know where it was raised, but maybe in Public Works, about the cost of signage at the college. I don't know if anybody can hear from Public Works who was present at the meeting who could help.
Yeah, it's just there were some questions about what all we were going to get for this amount of money.
Sure. So I can jump in and Jen can jump in as well. So what we're looking to do is a lot of digitizing of our signs. We also have a lot of signage on campus that's outdated that needs to be completely redone, also including ADA signage for our ADA bathrooms, the gender-neutral bathrooms, all of that sort. We're looking to do four digital kiosks to help individuals with the wayfinding as you come on campus. We have one sign, I'm going to guess it's probably 1990, and it's faded and chipped, and that's the primary entry location for the students, so digitizing that sign would also be likely upgrading a lot of the electrical that's going out to those signs because they are located kind of out throughout campus.
You're going underground with all the wiring and everything?
Yes, of course.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. So during our committee, we talked about this, and one of the things that we talked about was potentially putting the UCAP bus schedule somewhere in those kiosks. Is that something that we could possibly do so the students can go in there and say, what time is the UCAP bus to here or here, or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, something to do in the future. I won't be here, but John will be.
And Kathy.
Kathy.
One more, since we're adding wish lists, consideration for specific solar power for any of these signs? Or
we can certainly look at that. Some of the areas that the signs would be a good area to put signage, even if it's rooftop solar, to power that unit. So absolutely. Part of the design.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? 336. Have a motion?
I'll move it.
Second?
I'll second.
Question?
Yeah, can I just get Deputy Executive Contreras to tell you the answer to that?
She emailed
down for the questions. Remember the questions that we'd asked about the Medical Reserve Corps?
Yeah, sure. Sorry. So the first question was whether residencies would be is a hard and fast requirement for this, and it's not. So if you prefer, we can have it doesn't have to be a permanent Ulster County resident to volunteer for this.
Do we have to make an amendment to that, or what would we have to do to make that?
I think it says it in there, right?
It says it in the larger document, yeah. So
it's in the policy document, though, so I don't think you have to amend the resolution.
So we could pass the resolution. We could pass the resolution with the understanding that the policy doesn't have to be followed in regard to the residency requirement.
I would.
Chair Bartow.
Sorry.
It's adopting the policy as a file.
Yeah.
So I feel like, I mean, I do have some other questions. I feel like we would have to make that change if that was a.
I feel strongly about that. I feel like we should open that up to non-residents.
I tend to agree with Peter.
Yeah.
We could amend the policy document that's filed because. But I think then we would have to, in the resolved.
Is there any sense of urgency this has to be done this month, or is it going to really impact anything?
It doesn't have to be this month. We just wanted to get the ball rolling because the COVID pod ended in February, so we're trying to capture those volunteers.
I make a motion that we postpone it for 1 month to get these things resolved and put into the original document that then we can bring back and pass.
Okay.
No.
Second.
Yeah, I'll second that.
Yeah,
and then on the postponement, if I can just, I still, you know, I've asked for the backup to Exhibit A. Like, Exhibit A is those four lines, and all I keep getting is Exhibit A, like just the four lines. Like, I haven't seen the rules of
Okay.
Appendix A?
Appendix A.
Yeah.
It says Exhibit A. I mean, in my document, it says Exhibit A.
I see. Okay.
And then the other questions that I would love to have answered since we have a month is the $55,000, which my understanding is it's budgeted for. We were told that it's budgeted for advertising, I think, and outreach, but can we see the backup on what that looks like? What $55,000 in advertising and how that's going to be spent? And then that follows on the question of are there expected legacy costs associated with this? But that $55,000 that was budgeted for without actually having a medical corps next year, are we expecting to see a budget line for this, and what does it look like on this for exactly?
Sure. Okay.
We'll answer
that
question.
Yep.
The medical reserve fund.
Yeah. I wonder if it would be helpful to consider passing it this way and then amending it next month. That would allow them to get started. There's not going to be somebody who's a non-resident, I think, that's going to be hurt by this during the intervening month. And whether that would be a better way to address this and still get this going. I didn't speak on this when it came to our committee because I actually volunteered for COVID, and I was thinking that this might apply to me, and as a volunteer, I didn't want to be caught in any ethics on it. But I don't know that I'll be able to volunteer for it, so I'd like to speak for it. It's just so good. And so moving it forward, I think, would be good if it wouldn't cost us, you know, something important. And that's up to, you know, people to decide.
So, Chris, there was one more answer that we did get about the insurance, and I wonder if you could share that.
Yes, so the question was, what other liability would this open us up to, and have we considered it for insurance? And we have, so the county's insurance officer has been involved in all the discussions, and they'll get any other additional insurance as necessary, but we don't anticipate any costs beyond what's already budgeted.
I'm inclined to continue with the postponement because Legislative Bartels had several questions. I still have one unanswered question. If it was just one question, I think we'd do it, but there's several now that are on the table. So, and if there's no real huge sense of urgency, I think we're all behind it philosophically,
yeah.
But, you know, let's get these questions hammered out.
That's fine. Yeah.
Put it on.
Yeah, I was going to say pretty much what Legislator Criswell just said. You know, this is something that when I'm no longer a legislator, I'd like to volunteer for. So, you know, I'm definitely in favor of it. But I know that Legislator Bartels has questions, and you know, I'm not sure that we've addressed Legislator Criswell's questions to the fullest extent that we can. I don't think a month hurts us.
All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
All
right.
Opposed? 353.
I'll move it.
Second. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 368.
I'll move it.
Second. Aye. Discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. 369.
I'll move it.
Move it.
I'll second it for discussion.
Second. Discussion.
I still maintain my concerns. If everyone's willing to pass it, then that's, you know, up to the. I'll be voting no as it sits. I understand the reasoning behind it, but I think it's better to work through our staff than to, you know, set 23 people loose on our financial system.
I don't look at it like setting people loose, and this was a starting point. And I'd love to continue the conversation. I mean, I think it's completely appropriate the way it is. There's going to be no specific payroll employee information. I think that's in UNIS. You'll see a payroll total. You'll be able to see vendor-to-date payments, overtime numbers, no DSS recipient info, only amounts per program. I think just about everything there is spoilable. So the idea that 200,000 people can come to us and get this information in theory within 20 days that we don't want to grant ourselves with two budget analysts, 23 legislators, all other countywide elected officials, all their appointees. We could probably come up with 150 employees in this county that have access to what I'm saying legislators should have access to. We hear certain legislators, especially new legislators, talk about how handcuffed they feel imagine letting them safely surf what is literally foilable to 200,000 people, rather than asking Amber to do these deep dives that take her all day. We'd be asking Amber, especially as early on legislators, to clarify what I'm seeing here. I have to ask you one time, then we know it. What this could do as far as empowering the legislature in these meetings where we're always frustrated, where now we have to have these secret meetings to find things out, have access to a lot of that information that I'll remind everyone again is foilable. And I hear a reason like I don't trust myself to not do something with that information. Information I could get from Amber or information someone could foil, but we don't trust ourselves with that information. I just feel like, and if there's anything about this that someone's uncomfortable with enough not to vote this through, then let's talk about it and then have IS come in and remove that. I don't think there's anything that needs to be removed as far as healthy access for a legislator in New World. I mean, the idea that we're up here on the sixth floor and everyone's basically along that wall can have access to this, but we're telling ourselves that we don't have access to it. Let's go bother Amber with it. I think it's a very reasonable request that would bring us in 2023 into a much more informed legislature that we just haven't been. We come to these meetings and there's so many legislators that I talk to on the side, especially the ones that are coming in that are frustrated with what they're watching and what they're seeing us that are here experience with a lack of, you know, real diligence and education with what we're voting through.
Thank you. I have a list of problems with this. One is, first of all, I think we're encroaching on the operations of the county rather than setting a policy. I think the direct day-to-day activities of paying bills and shuffling money through the departments is a responsibility of the executive's office. That's number one. Number two is I have issues with security. We can't even get our own legislators here to use county-issued devices for email. We can't get them to use email addresses that are issued by the county, and yet we want to grant them access to the financial system? I don't know about that. I have issues with that, right? And thirdly, you know, I just think that, you know, at this point in time, you know, there's nothing I have ever asked for that I haven't gotten. We pay two budget analysts on our staff, on the legislative staff. And if we call them, call the clerk's office, we call the budget analyst, I need this information, we have it, you know, almost immediately. I don't have to wait for anything I've ever asked for. So I don't see, I think we're trying to fix a problem that doesn't really exist, in my opinion. I'm going to be a no on this, Chair Tavares, that I just think it's a reach. I think we're not prepared from a security aspect of it, and we certainly don't have the buy-in from all the legislators that they, you know, are going to use the county-issued devices for security reasons, dial in through a VPN, all those other things, right? So, no.
I mean, Kevin had his hand up and he didn't go yet. I'm fine with waiting for half.
Thank you, Leader Ronk. First, in regard to the operations department, this isn't really operations for us. It's more oversight. We're not going to be interfering in the day-to-day operations of County Executive's Office. And as for the legislators like myself, who rarely use their email or devices that we were given, I don't really think you have to worry about us snooping around in a New World software if we can't figure it out. So, I mean, I think that's a mute point. If you're not going to have 23 legislators all of a sudden trying to get into this software, New World financial management system, and interfering and snooping around. And you know, last night we were given something by the county clerk right on top. It said confidential and private. You know, I would assume that means don't share it. So we're given confidential information all the time. I'll be prepared to support this tonight, or regarding whatever the sponsor wants to do, postpone it to make improvements or pass it over to the floor.
Legislator Miller.
Yeah, just real quick to answer, day-to-day operation, how is it being informed in interfering with day-to-day operations? We would have no ability to change if it's read-only access. Like I said, everything is foilable. As far as security goes, I'm not sure what's in there. There's not nuclear codes in there. I'm not sure what we'd be able to even hand off to someone in the community that we can't go and get through. You say on one hand, I've always gotten every piece of information I wanted from New World through a staff. On one hand, how do you even know until you're looking at it all what you either could be asking for or could be looking at or could be educating yourself on? You come up with an idea, you ask a specific question, that's all you receive back, and at that point, you can take whatever that secure information is and pass it along to anybody they want. I don't know if Amber, I don't know if anything has ever been passed along to somebody, the media or somebody from Russia, where there's been something where we've gone back to Amber and said, has that ever happened, Amber? Has anyone ever come to you and go, you know, there's this piece of secure information that's out there. Who did you give this to? I don't know of this being a real issue, us having some kind of secure access in New World that has any kind of information that's somehow dangerous to be out there to the community. Like I said, it's all foiled. If we really wanted to, we could have it only be allowed to look at on our tablet. That's where the access would be granted to our tablet. We have a huge, really well-funded ITIS department. I'm sure they're capable of giving us a tablet with New World and not having us be able to access New World on our home computer, even though I think that would be a stretch that we wouldn't need to do, but if it made somebody happy, then sure. But like I said, how do you even know what you've missed or what you could be looking at without looking at it? And the idea that all these people, you pass people going in and out the parking lot, up and down the elevator when we get here for our meetings, and every one of the people you see has access to New World. But yet we want to keep ourselves away from it. It never ceases to amaze me what we hold ourselves back from. The first year I was here, we gave every executive request a raise, and we literally held, the only raises we didn't give were the legislative raises and the legislative staff. We literally pulled those back and gave raises to everyone else in the county. It never ceases to amaze me how we continue to hold ourselves back from being a real branch of government.
Commissioner Nolan?
Yeah, I think the analogy with FOIL requires us to recognize that a FOIL request is a specific request for information, and the documents that are returned are responsive documents. So we have some ability to have the documents that are asked for actually correspond to what is being researched. I think that we have the ability to sit down with our financial analyst and go through the entire system and be sure that what we're seeing, if we're asking for information about X, that we're getting information about X and not information about Z, and then having some announcement be made about Z says that Ulster County is doing such and such, when actually it's X that would have been relevant. So I think that the chance for misuse of the information is what motivates me to feel like this isn't the right way to approach this. And I think we should be grateful that we have people to help us make sure that if we're looking for specific information, that we actually get that information, and then we act on accurate information related to our concerns.
Thanks. You know, I don't worry about, like, malicious misuse of the information. My opinion has been, you know, last week and this week, too, that, you know, one of the things that I tried to do when I was chair and, you know, throughout my time in the legislature is to foster a professional non-political staff so that every legislator has the opportunity to get the same information. And, you know, we have incredibly professional, you know, financial staff here, and, you know, I've never had a problem getting information that I'm looking for, and even sometimes when I ask for something, you know, the staff will say, but I think that you really want this. This will get you what you're after. What you're looking for wouldn't get you there. So I almost feel like going through our staff instead of doing it ourselves can avoid a lot of missed work. You know, work that, you know, is wasted because you're heading in a direction that you think is going to bring you to the end goal you're looking for, but it doesn't.
We could still talk.
No, I understand, but I feel like this isn't going to help. I feel like going through the staff is better.
Commissioner Nolan? Commissioner Cahill?
Yeah, I just want to just say for the record that I didn't receive anything marked confidential from the clerk or deputy clerk or the clerk of the legislature or anything yesterday.
It was,
Okay. I just want to make that clear that not everybody got something marked confidential yesterday.
What committee were we in?
It was Laws and Rules Committee.
Okay.
It was in the Laws and Rules Committee regarding a resolution. I believe that there's copies for caucus tonight. Yes, my guess. Yeah.
Thank you.
Legislator Petit.
Thank you. You know, my previous life I was a department head and kept spreadsheets, and it was so simple to prepare a budget at the end of all that by being able to look at all the information that was there. So that's number one. Also, when I have contracted vendors reach out because they know, say, I put in a budget modification, well, you know, what's the status of that? So I can't look it up. I get in touch with Amber and Natalie. They get back to me. Then so what's occurring are extra layers of government. I have to go through a whole process, whereas I could easily FOIL it too. So I could FOIL X or Y, and just as easily as a reporter could FOIL X or Y, and then go out and put out incorrect information. That is not the intent, at least in my case. I don't know what other legislators would want to do with it, but certainly it would make our government budget more transparent for me, and I would like to have access to take a look at, especially things that are under $50,000. There's probably quite a bit out there that I don't even know we're paying for. And again, I have to go through all of these layers if I want to know if the, is it DiBella is getting paid on a monthly basis to do Elizabeth Manor, or if the SPCA's contract has been fulfilled, if they've received payment. Can I just look that up? I have to go to our clerks who I'd rather have, I'm sorry, a financial analyst, who I'd rather have them doing deep dives into the financial process than asking them questions. And that's just me. So there's 23 other people, you know, and the public. It's an awful lot. And I think we can simplify it.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm not worried about malicious intent or nefarious use. I mean, to me, it is a transparency issue first and foremost. The one thing that I would say, and because I've been here for this conversation, is it does concern me what Legislator Maloney brought up earlier. I would err on the side of wanting to know from IS that the access to this was from county devices, not from home computers, not from other. I mean, I think it is an issue that legislators aren't using county email. I mean, I think that's a problem. That a problem that was a national issue 10 years ago or something. I mean, so that security issue is a concern to me. I'm not concerned about the security of having legislators have the access. And to the point of having a legislator, as Minority Leader Ron described, and he didn't use these words, but kind of like going down a rabbit hole and spending a lot of time, that's on that legislator. If that legislator wants to spend a lot of time looking through stuff and empowering themselves and, as Legislator Petitia said, getting more information, to me that's not a problem. Again, ultimately this is all stuff that is ultimately public information, but I would want to know from IS that the access was secure and secured to county devices.
As you know, tonight was the first real discussion that we've had. We postponed it from last week.
Oh, okay.
Legislator Miller wasn't there. Well, the legislator happened there first.
Yeah, quick. Chair Bartels essentially made my point or question about whether IT has been consulted, what type of safeguards would need to be in place, what that process would look like, and are they able to ensure the needed safeguards are there. That's my question, is if they have been consulted, and then that's the information I would like going forward with this. Thank you.
Legislator Petit.
Thank you. I agree with Chair Bartel, and the other sponsor would be willing, if I would, to put that caveat in there that it must be accessed through our tablet.
Do the rest of the county that have access to New World only have the ability on the county issued laptop? So it would be no different. So it would be on, and that may even be a county policy already. So we may be already it may have, or if passed as is, we may have only probably had access on the tablet, but let's make it specific. Can I throw it up right now just to add that amendment to, you know, a simple line about...
If it passes today, I'm not ready to pass it today.
Yeah, so even if it's worth it.
I'll make that amendment that we add, you know, language in the resolve that says that it can only be accessed on a county on county owned equipment.
Thanks.
We have to add only the word only.
Did you guys second on that?
Yeah.
Mr. Rowe. Discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Legislator Moe, you had your hand up before anymore, or you're good?
No.
Okay. Senator Kritzoff.
Yeah. I feel like I'm being asked to make a decision on a system that I've never even seen. I don't know what this looks like. I've never tinkered around with it. I've used QuickBooks a lot and things like that. I've heard it's not like QuickBooks at all. So I want to better understand the system and better understand what it is we can see, what we can't see. So I think I'd like a demo before I can even make a decision about it.
I think I'm going to need people both to get it through Ways and Means. But so I would now ask for a postponement, and anybody, and I think that's a fair statement because most legislators don't have a lot of time on New World. So, and then getting on there, seeing what we'd have access to may either bring people around or go the other way when they see the nuclear codes. So, so I'll ask for a postponement for 1 month. Pete, that'll give you a chance, and we can all, anybody can go.
Can we actually organize it?
Somebody on the committee has to make that motion.
Should I get a motion to postpone 1 month and have second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Discussion?
The last thing I'll say is, you know, nothing stops legislators from coming in during office hours and working with a member of the staff to go through it as well on one of our devices up here, which I think, again, is going to get people more to their end goal than tinkering around with it at home with no context.
I'll support the postponement.
Can I specifically ask that we have IF here at the first meeting next month and the demonstration?
Well,
I don't think IF has to be the right department, would it? Finance?
I would hope. Or if anybody wants to come in and sit down with Amber and Natalie for an hour and ask them.
I think we should have a demonstration here.
That's fine too.
But I do want IS as well, because I do just want to have the conversation about the security with the remote laptop. And honestly, if that's what everyone else is using, it's going to be fine. But I just want to
Sure, Chris.
So, Legislator Runk said the word context, and that for me has been the problematic word for this, is seeing financial documents in context. Because I could pull up a really interesting report in QuickBooks that would look very different from somebody else pulling up a report in QuickBooks, you know, depending on what I want to highlight and how I wanted to present it. And so I just think that's my big concern, is that we could possibly pull information or view information in a way that's not showing it holistically. And that's what I want to better understand, like how the system works, how we're seeing X dollars in context with other past years or budget or whatever it is that we're needing to look at, but that we're understanding it from the biggest viewpoint rather than this is $50,000 sitting here, and we could make a story out of that $50,000 in any way. And I want to make sure that that's not what happens if we have access to this tool.
Thank you. So through the chair, so Ken or March, either one of you can probably answer this. So I understand there's issues even with viewing some of the tables and some of the data within the system today, even for the county controller. Is that correct?
We're reviewing the extent of our access right now. So I can't give you an exact clear picture that I had everything that I want access.
Yeah, but you have had issues.
I will say that it is, every time you want to view a certain type of data, you have to give it a bunch of parameters.
Well, that's what I was getting at.
It's not easy to do, and it is complicated. However, I want you to know I routinely get questions from legislators who want access to a contract,
that they can't get to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems like something that would be really helpful if people could pull contracts from mm-hmm. the New World and look at them.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And so there's levels of access that have to be granted through, I don't know, through the budget office or through IS or a combination of both, that allow individuals, based on, I guess, need to know and job description, the ability to look at certain areas of the financial system. Is that correct?
That is correct. And yeah. The other part that I would add is that the system is highly specific with the different modules with regard to the expertise necessary to know how to navigate okay. and work through mm-hmm. that would cross not only the finance department, the budget department, the comptroller's office, the county attorney's office, the purchasing office, that necessarily would not be one easily covered in one meeting, let alone by one individual.
So let me ask, and if you may or may not be able to answer this, right?
Yeah.
Is there anyone in the county who has access to everything?
No.
Okay.
I do not believe so.
Okay. And so then to say that everybody walking in out of the building has access to everything is just not accurate. Is that fair to say? Okay. So, you know, here's where I am with this. You know, I've been working with databases for a long, long time. Highly confidential, restricted databases that take multiple layers of sign off, and then even inside there, can't get everything you want, right? And there's a good reason for that, right? And if the county has established that as security reasons to control the data that's in there, even if it's read-only, you know, you still have those layers of security that you have to go through and the permissions for each one of these modules as you just described that I think is just, you know, who's going to do that? First of all, who's going to do that? Who's going to sit there and say, all right, so 23 people now have access to everything when there's not a county employee today who has access to everything? So, again, I think it's a reach. I think it's a bit too much for what we're trying to accomplish here. If we have very specific asks, we have experts who can get us those details as we need them. Thank you.
I'll go to the assembly next, but just a reminder, we shared the motion a second to postpone.
I think that last bit here was a bit confusing. The first question was about access that the comptroller is supposed to have that they haven't had, the same access that's been denied our own legislative staff. With regards to all these different levels of almost like we're talking about, we're in the Pentagon for a minute here, DSS has access to the welfare management system. So only people in DSS, there's a couple of things that are different, but we're talking about New World. Basically, everybody has about the same access to New World, the rank and file that have access to New World. I would be, of course, expecting that whatever Amber has and Natalie have access to would be our version. And I'm fairly certain IS could handle giving us the same access that Amber has. Let's not overcomplicate what we're talking about here.
Interpret.
Yeah, I do, my understanding of this is that the ask is fairly specific, you know, in terms of New World and the ask within New World. I appreciate the comment about that this could take, you know, this could take some time. What I think we're envisioning for next week is a look at how it looks, not a training, but obviously if this passes, we would expect that there's going to be a training for legislators who are interested to sit in and learn how to navigate the permissions that they're allowed to navigate. Like that would have to come, but that is not going to come next week. Next week is just next month.
The next month.
Yeah, next month. Next month is really just going to be a look at what it looks like when you have.
We're part time.
Yeah, when you have the permissions.
There's nothing specific about
all of the table postponement.
Aye.
Opposed.
I'm opposed.
You're opposed. I'm opposed. 370.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second.
I spoke with Legislator Petit earlier in the day about this. You know, I without revisiting all of my concerns that I raised last week. You know, I think that the goal that begat this resolution is a laudable one, and it's important because when we pass a policy or when we pass a resolution saying that we want an RFP or something along those lines, what we want in the RFP should end up in the RFP if it's something the legislature asked for. The legislature's done RFPs in the past ourselves. Perhaps that's a way that we could accomplish that, but with regards to like the ARPA Parks program and other RFPs, the transit study, you know, we could put specific deliverables in the resolutions that we pass and then follow up if they're not, you know, if they're not in the RFPs themselves without adding another layer of review to these RFPs. I have concern when the legislature tries to insert itself into these things because I've seen things try to happen by committee. You know, we had the Solid Waste Management Improvement Committee, which went on for 3 years or so, and in the end you had no resolution. You know, no real resolution. I have an issue with doing things like this, you know, operational things by committee, because I've not seen it work.
Yeah, 370, I did not anticipate passing anytime soon. Okay. This was a starting point and a conversation that all of a sudden is coming up a lot. People are very upset about how some of these RFPs are looking. The head of planning refuses to even let me look at an RFP. When asked on several occasions, not allowed to see the bids after they're in, closed and done, before the bids are awarded. I think we need to we need more oversight, we need more involvement, but the kind of point can't be at hurting the executives' day-to-day operation and timing. But I do think there's a way to have us have, maybe it doesn't have to be, I'm not saying it needs to go and pass the committee before any RFP can go out, but certainly give us the chance to see it before it goes out and talk to the executive branch of government and opine on what some of us think should be in there or shouldn't be in there. I also think it's long overdue that we have some type of representation in the bid awarding process. When you read our policy, it's basically the exec chooses five people, not very specific whatsoever, and five people, and at some point they go and choose the who they want and get into bid. I think we're far overdue. There's been many things that have happened over the last couple of years for us to go, yeah, we need more oversight and more involvement in this process. Do we need to be the driving force behind awarding a bid? No, but do we need a seat at the table and a liaison from the legislative branch of government? I think so, and I would love over the next month or two to get people's opinion on both of those things. Access to review of the bid and the process of awarding the bid. Even when CARES Act, you created a system which we're now finding out didn't work all that well, with legislators giving their opinion and then sending it off to the EDA, now we find out multimillionaires around the county were getting CARES funding that was supposed to be for struggling small businesses. Something is wrong here. Something is really wrong at times, and we need oversight, we need involvement, and like I agree with Kent, it can't be to the detriment or hurt the timing of the executive's ability, but I think we can do both. I think we can have a little more oversight, I think we can have a little more involvement, there's a way to do it, and I think that I'll need to talk to Tracy as the chair, Ken as a former chair, who really understand the difference between the legislative and executive branch of government. But I think most legislators I talk to agree a little more involvement would be appropriate if we could figure out a way to do it without costing time. So I would be fine. This is something I anticipate being postponed. Anyone else who wants to talk to me about it, reach out. John, I'll be picking your brain. But Ken and Tracy, I'm going to look to talk to you guys for a couple hours over the next week and then continue this conversation for 10 or 15 minutes next week. But I'm totally expecting a postponement.
Second. I'm sorry. I made a motion to postpone it, and then we can continue with everyone else's comments.
Okay.
I'll second.
So, just a couple of things, and I don't know who would provide this information. I don't think there's anybody from purchasing here. Maybe the comptroller's office, maybe the finance office. But we need what I would like to see prior to voting on this is the total number of RFPs, because we got a couple of different numbers last time. I think the first one was in the 40s, and it went up to about 100, and then, you know, wasn't quite sure what they were. And also, the one thing that I think is really important is the number of RFPs that end up using the state bid, right? So that's going to be always, right? You know, we have to use whatever the state bid is. So what is the impact, and how many of those bids are end up using what the state bid is for us? And also, timing requirements from the time that you have this. Are there any legal, you know, timing calendars that we have to hit in order to fulfill, you know, like budgetary things or through the controller's office to stay within guidelines, right? I mean, we can't just say we have an RFP, but we want to look at it first, and then maybe after the people put in their bid or whatever, you know, I just want to make sure we have a full understanding of all that stuff prior to taking this up again. Thank you.
Chris Powell?
Yeah, I agree with the legislator Cahill about the timing. I think that's really important that we respect the staff's time and that we're not dragging our heels. But I also agree with Legislator Maloney. I think it's important that legislators be a part of the RFP. And I said I worked closely with the purchasing to on this RFP for the Arts and Culture Master Plan. I think it worked out really well. You know, I said here's what I did with the city. Here's what I think we could be looking at. And it was a very clean, easy kind of back and forth. And I didn't write the RFP. I just gave some recommendations of here's what I'd like to see in it, and it was simple. So I think that process can be clean, easy, and not an obstruction of the workload.
Yeah, I'd like to ask, following on what Legislator Cahill said, like, I'd like to ask for the numbers, maybe even a several-year look back, let's say 3-year look back, how many RFPs, how many RFQs, and how many, and it's important because this is for non-commodities, how many of those were non-commodities, so just, like, what's relevant. I think especially when it relates to a legislative initiative, having some involvement and certainly getting to see a draft of what's going out is really critical for the legislative initiative. We've seen the problems with that here. I think the numbers are going to tell us a lot in terms of that balance of like where we could be stepping on operations. I can tell you that getting people to serve on RFP committee, some are more demanding than others, is challenging. And if there are 100 a year, you know, having two 100 sessions of two people, and when the minority has 70 people, like each of them would have to serve quite a few times, might also be challenging. So I think there are real world. I look forward to talking to Legislator Maloney about this, but I think it's a conversation we should be having about figuring out what the balance is and how we weigh all of those things. It will be very important here for purchasing as well to have those numbers.
I'm also going to say a little education is a good thing. You know, if we could understand the structure of RFPs, RFQs, really get what we can give to be helpful, and you know, very clear. You know, what is it? The intent is it? Whatever it is that we can provide, that would be helpful for me anyway. You know.
I agree with that. That's, I think, sometimes if we really attempt to dive into a concept like this and explore it, no matter where it goes, we all end up knowing a lot more about a process we don't know a hell of a lot about and have been involved in. So I think that's one of the big valuable things that comes out of these type of things. We just hope as long as we do our due diligence and we have a lot of conversations, we really go into it with an open mind, thinking there may be a different way of going about this with a little more involvement. Like I said, even if we come out of it not, we're all better off for it.
I encourage everybody to reach out to Legislator Maloney if you have questions, additional comments between now and next month's meeting. Now I don't have to ask the question I was going to ask is, what do we do if the person who made the motion isn't in the room at the time of the vote? But I don't have to ask that.
You don't have to. I'm still here.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Back to resolution 123 as presented. Motion?
I'll move it for discussion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion? Let's say Petit, this one is yours. We've postponed it for you.
I was told by our clerk that everyone had gotten the revisions, and I mean, I guess if you have any questions on those, but it was forwarded by thank you. And what he did is he was fine with the policy as written. He just wanted to make note that it should go to the budget director, and then anything referring to the state was removed out of it.
Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
All right. There's forthcoming resolutions. We have two presentations. I'll go to the college first.
Two presentations?
Oh, God.
All right. So thank you, everyone. I'm Jamie Capuano. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Vice President for Administrative Services at the College. So I'm going to jump in on budget presentation. Any questions that you have sent me at the end, if you have any questions or discussion. Stay awake.
Yay. Yay.
So just really kind of big picture here, looking at our total budget over time. Our total budget for 23-24 is coming at $25.2 million. You will notice that the decline on 21-22, that was the stimulus funding, that was the CARES funding, that really inflated that budgetary area. We then had some residual spending out in 22-23. Unfortunately, all of our CARES spending has to be spent and completed by end of this current fiscal year, which we're on track to do. So kind of, again, big picture, the 23-24 budget, what it's including. One thing that has been really paramount coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic, a lot of the services that we extend to our students must continue. So absent that federal funding source, those resources fall to operating support. So that's enhanced counseling, the mental health services. Our students have really taken advantage of the expansion of mental health services. We want to be able to maintain that going forward. We're finding our students are coming in off of COVID. Some students have never stepped foot in their high school experience. They're coming into our college, and we really need to make sure we're supporting them all around. We are seeing a need for additional advising and student services. So again, as we have students coming back in, we really make sure we're advising them, especially coming into math. That area is really focused, really big area that we're seeing is concern for students. We have several new initiatives. One of the main ones, we received funding from SUNY to look at enrollment initiatives. Part of what we did was expand and look at our operations internally, and we're doing initiatives to really improve access to our SUNY Ulster Foundation scholarships. That's a mouthful. And to really make sure that we're enhancing the efficiencies. So the idea behind this is a student walks in the door, they're meeting with a financial aid counselor for the first time. We want to be able to tell that student, you have access to foundation scholarship funding. This gap you're seeing on your piece of paper will be supported through the foundation. So really improving those efficiencies. The budget also includes no layoff or furloughs. We're very proud of that. A lot of our sister community colleges have gone through those exercises. We're very happy to say we have not had to do that. The budget will fully annualize several collective bargaining agreements. So this is the first time we have all three fully settled. And we do project the fund balance to about $876,000. That is a little bit less than we did for current year. This is our enrollment trend. So you'll see from 2021 through 23-24, that kind of downward slide. 23-24, we're projecting a slight increase in enrollment. We are seeing students are welcoming, excited to come back to campus. A lot of the other community colleges have remained remote. Those campuses are showing drastic decreases in enrollment and projected enrollment. Students want to be engaged and they want to be in person. So this is our state aid numbers, and I'm going to go into a little bit of the story behind these numbers. Right now, state aid is held flat. We did receive the floor funding model, which we're very thankful for. As you see, that does create that predictive funding level across the state. You do see the dip in 2021, and then back up to the 6.1 when the floor funding came into play. So a quick summary of the state budget. While we are very thankful to have that floor funding model that really does create that predictive funding for us, it doesn't account for any growth. So it doesn't look at utilities, healthcare costs, collective bargaining agreements. It's literally taking what you received last year and flat funding it. It also is based on an FTE formula, which does not take into account part-time students and the needs of part-time students. They are discounted on an FTE funding model.
Unfortunately, the $60 million in enrollment funds, which we are receiving a portion of this year, we didn't get $60 million, has been shifted to state-operated campuses. There is new funding coming out through the state, which we're very excited to see what that will mean, but this funding source has been shifted. So looking at some of the expense reductions, we are going to be upgrading to Banner 9, similar to your New World financial system. This is our financial system. It is not as great as New World, I'll say that. But the Banner 9 financial system, we do have to upgrade to that. Banner 8 will no longer be supported, so we won't have that IT support behind Banner 8, and it creates a security concern. For the first time, we're budgeting a vacancy variance. So we've looked at how long it takes us to hire, and we've noticed it's taking longer and longer to bring people in the door. So we are going to budget a vacancy variance this year. That will be the first time we're doing that, but that will more accurately reflect the time it takes to actually hire and onboard somebody for our hiring system. We also do anticipate reductions in part-time and overtime needs. That's really just based on where we're at this point. We're not doing as many events on campus. We do have some events, but not as many events on campus. And really that part-time need, as we shift and our faculty are back in the classroom, we're seeing more students that way, we're right-sizing the schedule. And that's going to result in potential reductions in part-time. So the revenue action. So the budget does include a full-time tuition increase of $100 per semester and $20 per part-time. This is below the increase in the Pell Award. Pell Award is increasing by $500, resulting in a Pell Award of $7,395. Our resulting tuition rate will be $5,280, which is still remaining below the statewide average of $5,540. We are also respectfully requesting an increase in the county's maintenance of effort, or the county's share, of $500,000. I did look at county support and our based on percentage of operating expenses, and right now the county support is about 25% of operating. When I look at that regionally, county support is about 30% of operating expenses. So this is that super busy chart, apologies for all the colors, but this is really showing where we're at in terms of the tuition, state aid, county share, out of county, other revenue, and then that white is that federal stimulus. So you'll notice that the federal stimulus falls off, we are starting to include those costs within our operating expenses. This is part of our exciting news today. Our enrollment by type has shifted. So I think last time we presented, we were really 50-50 part-time to full-time. That puts a big strain on all of our student resources. Now we are starting to see the shift where students want to come back on a more full-time basis, which is very exciting for us. It's very student-friendly. Students finish faster when they're going full-time. They're more engaged. They have more access to the student services, and they tend to stay with us through that fall to spring and then coming back around in the fall. Quick snapshot on the SUNY Ulster budget process. We have budget discussions on campus for a long time. We do a lot of town hall budgets. Can we get that stakeholder engagement? We present to our board in May. We're here for June/July for the county. And then we have to submit our budget up to SUNY for their final approval in August. And our beginning of our fiscal year is actually September 1. So different fiscal year from the county. Any kind of discussions, questions?
So I just, first of all, want to commend the college for giving the Economic Development Education Committee the budget earlier than we've ever gotten it before, which gave our committee an opportunity to look at the budget ahead of time and come up with questions, which you folks answered in our last committee meeting. And I just wanted to acknowledge that you did take that extra effort to go out there and do that. The other thing that I want to point out is that the model for college funding has always, is supposedly, you know, one-third tuition, one-third state aid, one-third county aid. And as you can see, the state and the county fall short of that in the equation, and we're putting it on the backs of the students, right? And I think that that's a mistake, and I've been against that for a long, long time, from the very first time I was in the legislature. So I think, you know, anything that we can do to get that number closer to what it's designed to be, a third, a third, a third, we should be doing that in the legislature. So the ask of, you know, $500,000, I support 100%, and our committee did as well. I just want to let everyone know that.
Chair Martell?
Yeah, I agree. I support the additional ask, and actually, would be open to, you know, more conversation about how the county can contribute more. I really do believe that the college is the tool of the county, as I always say, and you know,
I believe that the more that we can help youth to increase enrollment and actually provide programming, the better off we all are. I have a specific question, and that's, you talked about the fund balance. Do you have a fund balance policy, and where does that fund balance fall in the policy in terms of operating?
So right now our fund balance is about $6.6 million. So we're hovering, you know, within that percentage that we're supposed to be with. We follow the state controller guidance, so we're falling within that percentage. Unfortunately, as you're a smaller operation, you tend to have those, you know, that percentage is much more valuable when you're a much larger entity. So we try to stay within that controller recommended range of, you know, 10 to 15. We are a little bit above that at this point, but we are finding that given our smaller kind of stake, we should be a little bit more healthy on the fund balance side.
And then if I might ask one other question, at one point, and maybe it's too much to go into right now, but there was discussion about a four-year nursing program, and I wonder, is there an update on that? Did that happen? Or where are we going to jump in?
We will always be, in the foreseeable future, an RN program, but we have been in conversations with our sister public institutions, as well, in how we can have more robust 2+1, 2+2, even a few years ago, the demand for BSNs were just, it was far outstripping. There was talk that the RN would be obsolete, and that's not the case with COVID. But we're also seeing interest in partners to do bridge programs from an RN to an MSN, so accelerating that for students. And we've had conversations with our sister SUNY institutions as well to make that a reality, because you know, the demand for nurses is huge, and it is a program where we are constrained by accreditation and the number of seats and clinical sites. So anything we can do, I think, is a real service to our community.
Thank you.
Chris.
Yeah, I was just curious, in the presentation, you said that the state approved your budget in August, correct? Mm-hmm. And so we approved the budget. Is there ever any changes that happen that the state comes back to you and says, we'd like you to do this, or are they pretty much just pass it through?
I have not seen that happen, so we should not say it out loud.
Okay. I was just curious. Yeah. I actually didn't know that.
I think theoretically they could. Okay. So in theory, they could come back down. Typically, when we're going through the budget process, we're in constant communications with SUNY, so they know what's coming, and if they see kind of a red flag, they'll address it at that point. We've never, in my tenure, seen a budget come back from doing after submission through both the state, through the county and the college that has been rejected.
But if it did, we would just amend it. We would just approve an amendment.
Correct. We would approve it our side and bring it back for the approval.
Thank you.
I mean, one thing that I could add that we are definitely seeing from SUNY this year is tied with funding, more accountability metrics, and SUNY holding money until college is hit. We don't know exactly how that will look, but certainly they're moving, I wouldn't say to performance-based funding, but more of a hybrid in there as well. So.
Will that affect your cash flow?
Not with this.
No, we wouldn't expect that to impact any cash flow. That would really be the additional funding that the state provides, in additional supplemental, or competitive grant funding.
Okay.
So
you.
They have put those parameters around.
Thanks. I know our enrollment's increasing, not as much as we'd like, but it's increasing. How does it compare to our sister counties, you know, Dutchess, Westchester, Orange?
So I won't speak at the specific college, but we are hearing that the sister institutions are declining in enrollment. Specifically, some of our sister institutions are very large. So that becomes much more problematic when you're trying to really right-size your
operation.
Economies
of scale,
absolutely. So as those institutions don't go back to full in-person, that really hinders the ability for them to recruit and maintain the students through attrition. We're seeing those students coming over
to us.
Maybe we
get some of those back, or get some chargebacks from other people this time.
That's the plan. So trying to really right-size and get the students what the students want when they want it, and really remaining competitive, especially if we think through like our police safety training criminal justice program, that is an area that is a heightened focus. We know Columbia Green opened a program. We're doing everything we can to really incentivize students to come here. They come from the southern counties up here. That is a great incentive for us.
My second question is, you know, we're in the midst of an EMS crisis, and has there been any exploration of ALS paramedic classes, courses?
Very preliminary conversations have happened. Our Board of Trustees have asked Academic Affairs to look at that and the demand, and I think also as we think about healthcare demand more broadly and what that means from a holistic. So we are in early stages still, but
excellent. Thank you.
Mr. Roberts.
Thank you. Enrollment's up over last year, but what is it down over the last 4 years?
I don't know the first time I was up on the MDU.
No.
In numbers.
I can go back.
500?
Yeah, we can.
We at the beginning, Kevin.
There we are.
I had it memorized.
So this is FTE.
Wow.
So this is FTE, not headcount, but how we're compensated through the state.
Can you explain the difference?
Full-time versus part-time. Sorry.
Well, it's actually, they compute for part-time students. It's based on credit load.
So that combined full-time, part-time.
Part-time, the credit load.
And I've always been a proponent that everybody in the county or a particular school district benefits from having a good school, whether you're a senior citizen or a parent with no kids. Mm-hmm. But it seems like enrollment's going down, but expenses haven't been going in the same direction. Are we going to see any movement toward that?
Mm-hmm. So I can speak to that. We are also looking at diversifying the number of students and diversifying the revenue sources. So one thing we do have on campus, we have space to. So that there are other things we're looking at. How can we diversify our revenue sources for the revenue coming in through our line is just other revenue. Those revenue sources coming in to reduce overall costs. We have seen our numbers specifically on the faculty side have decreased. The retirement incentives, there's also the staff retirement incentives. That has reduced your baseline numbers. What really hurts us is every time a part-time student comes in, they can take 2 credits. They can take 3 credits. That student that requires financial aid, student account, accounting, finance, all of those operations still have to support that part-time student. So we're seeing as we look, these numbers don't really paint that full picture, but we are constant cognizant of how to reduce overall operating costs. We'll be coming back as we do our facility master plan, which is going to be the time we're going to focus on how do we look at both our space, our campus size, and what we're operating at, based on our current enrollment and future enrollment projections.
I'll be looking forward to seeing that.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Fun data.
So last year in 21-22, that 1,720 FTE, if you back out, SUNY Ulster supported 6,000 individual students in that time. So about half of them, and these are just the credit, FTE credit side. So that 1720 was about 3,000 credit students, and we supported another almost, it's about 50-50, 3,000 in workforce development and non-credit. So the difference between that 1700 and what our operation supports is pretty significant, and that's a historic bureaucratic model that it was built for 4-year institutions, mm-hmm. not community colleges.
Yes, thank you. So speaking of campus size,
yes.
So the Kingston campus,
yes.
The utilization of that facility, would you say that you could improve that by, I think the design, the purpose, as my understanding, I was not in the legislature when this happened, but was to have, people who live in the Kingston be able to walk to college, the same kids who walk to the high school or drive, take a bicycle or a city bus to the high school can now do that, right? And further, now that the hospital is right across the street, do you see opportunities there where you can maybe enhance some of the programs available to work in conjunction with the hospital to provide some of the services that need? It's a community college, right?
Absolutely. So that is a key focus on the master plan, looking at how we can better utilize that space, specifically looking at that space in proximity to everything going on in Midtown Kingston. So absolutely, hospital hubs are right over there. We also have a lot of community-based organizations operating out of Midtown Kingston. How can we better utilize that space? Is top priority.
Thank you. Thank you.
I just had one other question that wasn't already asked. So instead of giving more money, I'm always under the mindset, let's work on shared services. I think there's opportunities with the county and our departments where we could look at, and I see you smiling, so I'm hoping you agree, that there's, you know, potential some overlaps that we have where we could work together better instead of just handing you more money.
Mm-hmm. So that is absolutely an area that we've always been focused on. I will say the county legislature, and Ken was smiling, we focused on a shared services through the purchasing department, so recognizing the county purchasing is exactly the same as the college purchasing. So we have a shared services contract with the county for that service. We found it to be extremely helpful. Rather than having to hire more staff to fund that office, we're able to have a very reduced staff level, who's acting as the liaison between us and the county, and also including us within the bid specs that go out. For, again, we're buying the same things, we're doing very similar work. So absolutely.
We also have shared services agreements within SUNY for IT, which is especially valuable for smaller college size. So our chief information officer is a shared service resource, and as a smaller college, I have asked SUNY to continue to look at ways that we can enhance that.
Thank you. All right. Nicole Gallagher.
Thank you. I don't know if it's too late, but I did email a presentation to Natalie Amber if it's possible to put on the screen. So only we'll hand them out, and I'm not sure if it's enough for everybody here, but hopefully we'll have enough for
you. Do you need a comments or not?
I need it, but I don't have
it.
This is Elena Bugalopoulos. We call her Elena V, so if you ever need to look her up, Elena V is probably a little bit easier. But I wanted to just give her a moment to talk to you about the quality analyst work that she's been doing, which is a position that thankfully she created in our office in the last budget. And Elena has experience working previously in the nonprofit finance sector, including review of grant applications by nonprofits and monitoring nonprofit work. And I also wanted to mention that Elena's first work in the controller's office was actually creating a database of potential conflicts out of the annual disclosure forms that are required to be filed through the county ethics law. So I'm going to turn it over to Elena. She has can walk you through the presentation, and if it can be on the screen, that's great, and if not, that's fine. We can follow along on paper. So thank you, Elena, for joining us tonight.
I have this for you. Hello. Nice to meet you all. Thank you so much for having me. Elena Vogaropoulos. So before we get into the meat of the presentation, because as you guys can see, there is some graphs on there, I kind of wanted to give you an overview of the work that we've been doing in order to formulate these graphs. So it began with pulling the scopes of contracts to see what services and reporting requirements are currently required. I also attended the countywide contract training that is provided to all county employees to handle any type of contract within the department. If they touch a contract, they go to this training. I also sat down with the contract management department in order to understand from their side what the pain points are, how the process goes, and where departments could inform better their scopes. So we created a contract universe. This universe is the group of contracts that we are currently analyzing. We pulled this universe by the contract type. Currently, the county utilizes 236 contract types. We narrowed that down to 96 that are solely to do with services. Now, we're planning to further narrow down this universe, because that services is a pretty broad title, and we really want to drill down to contracts that specifically have to do with constituent services. Now, we have been reaching out to different departments and also to vendors. We've done a site visit with a vendor that a legislator raised concerns with. It was the Community Action Committee. we went, saw their facility. We have received reports from DSS and from Community Action regarding their 2022 contract. They're currently in an active 2023 contract for outreach, for outreach and case management to people who are placed in temporary housing in motels and hotels. The good thing is, Community Action is very open about their state and how things are running. One of the issues that we're working through is that county funding only provides a very small amount for the services that they actually do, and for specifically the outreach program that they are contracted to. So in order to piece out how much of the county funding actually contributes to that contract. Now, on the second page, we have the contract universe. We have there identified 2,459 open contracts within our financial system. This totals to $554 million. The top 10 vendors are shown in both graphs. The bar graph is the total dollar amount, and the pie chart is the total number of contracts. The total number of contracts is a slightly longer list because we have six people vying for that 10th spot there. Based on the charts, Family of One Stop and Gateway make up a total of 41% of total number of contracts, and together they make up $53 million, which is 9.7% of all funding. So about almost 10% goes to vendors provide for. Going to the observations slide, from all the investigative work we've found, the closing process can be greatly improved. There are 1,205 contracts that are open in our financial system that appear to no longer be active. This is not related to one department, it is countywide. There's a pie chart, it has like basically kind of equal slices per department where these contracts fall under. We've determined that this is due to the fact that since the closure of the 8th division, the 8th responsibility for closing contracts was not reassigned. Previously, a contract could be kept open for 2 years before its closure, but since the closure of the 8th division, no contracts have been closed. We recommend that the 1,205 contracts are reviewed for closure, just in case there is a valid reason as to why these contracts are being kept open. This number are based on contracts that expired over 2 years ago and have not been invoiced since 2021.
Okay.
169 of these contracts that have expired were never invoiced. Many of these contracts are also duplicates for the next year of continued servicing. So for example, Community Action, for their specific contract with outreach to people in temporary housing, they have open contracts from 2018, 2019, 2020, and including their most active ones, they were never closed in the system. Now, for continued observation or observation slide, this closure would result in different figures from the first slide with the total amount of active contracts for each vendor. With the closure of this, even just 1,000 of them, it would greatly increase the amount of money that we're seeing these organizations currently handling. We've also observed that reporting requirements are varied by department. Some are specific about the measurable data points that they wish collected, while other departments just state that a report will be required. For example, mental health gives very specific points of the people being served, where they're located, their ages. Well, a lot of other departments tend to just say, we will require a report, as this goes. This can make it difficult for vendors who are contracted with different departments as to how they're given guidance and how they're going to be reporting with the county. Even though we're the county, it's totally two different relationships between different departments. Additionally, the responsibility for reviewing reports and evaluating services is generally incumbent on the contracting department, with no central repository for these reports. So So if a department is looking to work with a vendor, they have to reach out to the department. The department has to then reach out to the person who is working with that vendor in order to get the reports. And there is no easy way for them to evaluate whether a vendor is someone they would want to use or not. For our last side, kind of looking forward to our future plans, we're looking to work and collaborate with the legislator to hear about what vendors might be of interest that constituents have brought concerns with you to about them. We really want to know, I really would like to know the names of those vendors. We also want to work with departments to understand their current data collection points and how they formulate their reports, because it is different for every department, for every contract. We'd also want to engage with vendors to understand pain points in the process, getting the reports to us, the questions asked, timeline, where could we improve it, in which we could get faster responses from those vendors. For data collection, we're kind of looking to create standard templates, data points that, dependent on the contract type, would be required in the scope. We're looking at current contracts that have reports. We're trying to get those reports in so we can currently analyze contracts that have already occurred, so we can get some more data on whether or not these vendors are doing what they need to do. We're also looking to do more site visits with vendors, especially if there's been raised concerns about the facilities in which these services are being performed out of. And for our last kind of future plan is we really want to connect with constituents directly. This means we want to do online surveys, physical surveys. We want to try to work with the vendor to try to provide that survey to them at the point of service, perhaps a QR code where they can scan if they are unable to fill out a physical version. And we also would want to require vendors to identify whether services have been provided by the county. In a previous audit, it had been found out that some vendors, because the state dropped their requirement for services to be stated where they're funding from, that that filtered down to the county. And that's not true. And so we just want to make sure that these vendors are stating that this is provided by Ulster County, so that constituents can come back and say, wait, I should have a say in how this service is being performed. This is not up to standard. I'm paying for this. So we really want to ensure that constituents are aware of the service is from Ulster County, and that these constituents have a way to talk to us about the services that they're being provided.
I'll open that door.
Any questions?
Well, first of all, thank you. This is very, very helpful. I would definitely, I don't know what the first steps are to getting these contracts closed, but I hope that there's activity. I can reach out to the executive by the house for that. I'm wondering, did you, in your investigation and in your work, did you verify whether the reporting actually happened? Talk about the different types of reporting.
So that's going to be on a case-by-case basis. As we're pulling and identifying each constituent contract, we have to go to each department to ask about that specific report. So it really is dependent on the contract and the vendor. For the fee that we have been asking for, because we've just done our initial aptitude or our first findings, and then we started to dive deeper into it, they have been able to provide the reports. It's interesting because we did actually receive, for Community Action particularly, DSS sent us one report, and then Community Action sent us a totally different report from what DSS had. So it's also interesting to see what data the vendor is actually collecting and versus what is being passed on to DSS or to the department.
Yeah, I would say that, I think that's something that we've, in creating this position, which I'm very happy to know that one of the things we've discussed is sort of the ability to actually have a metric where we're looking at performance, something that I think we lacked in the county, and these reports that end up somewhere that no one sees, that, and also, just having been here a long time, I know that even through the course of several budget analyses and Legislator Kagan would probably remember, there was a time with one of our budget analysts where
we could not even get basic factual information related to numbers related to particularly DHS contracts. And I remember at that time it was O'Connor and Lee was our analyst, and they said that they had never seen the boulder work in all of the counties anywhere. That they weren't asking for specific names, they were asking for numbers in order to be able to make out evaluations that we were presenting. Now, I think we're in a very different place in terms of transparency, but it's going to be a process to really get to the point where we're measuring outcomes. And this is, I mean, this touches on that in a lot of ways, which I appreciate. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Motion. I move we adjourn.
Second.
Second, real fast.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Those coming down caucus.